UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
You're listening to The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Is Jerry Callow, C-A-L-L-O. I think that's what you're referring to.
Jerry Coleman was the ex-second baseman of the Yankees. He passed away. So who are you alluding to?
Jerry Coleman.
You can have a dead man on.
No, I first off, God, I said he might be coming on.
I'm serious. Jerry Coleman died. So who is this Jerry Coleman you're alluding to?
He's let's see here. He works for. He's a Baltimore radio personality. He was going to talk some Ravens.
Okay, that's nice. Jerry Coleman was the former Yankee. Was the World Series MVP in 1950, and then broadcasting Yankee games before going on to broadcast for the San Diego Padres. Passed away in 2014. That will not be the guy we're having on.
No, and this guy hasn't messaged me back yet, so he might not be either. But Jerry Coleman, not letting me pull up his bio.
Marcus may be listening to the show and correcting us. B.F. Skinner is the guy that we were alluding to before. B.F. Skinner conditioned pigeons, like you've done with the Mets song. Pigeons were used to guide missiles.
Wait, what? Really?
That's what it says. That's what the texter says for We Want to Know Wednesday. Pigeons never actually did a mission, but during World War II, psychologist B.F. Skinner trained pigeons, it was called Project Pigeon, to guide missiles, bombs, to their target more accurately. Project Pigeon research was funded by the U.S. military and later helped Navy to develop electronic guidance systems for weapons. Now, I don't mean to be rude, but how the hell did the pigeons do that? You can't push a missile.
They just got like 1,000 of them and they lifted it up?
I don't think so.
And then they...
I think you're making crap up. I don't believe that's true.
By the way, this is Jerry Coleman. Sports W. Okay.
Well, that's
Coleman.
Another guy named Jerry Coleman.
Yes. Yeah. No, I know. But he says he knows you. Said you were.
We were buddies? Probably. Oh, no. Joe Man Coleman's kid. Oh, yeah. He does the Ravens games. He's a sportscaster in Baltimore. Yeah. Jerry Coleman.
Don't be a wise ass.
I'm not. I'm trying to save face because he's going to come on. I'm going to be embarrassed. So I'm trying to.
Now you know all the. Listeners are going to
tell me, hey, did you know Valvano said he didn't even remember you? And then he finally comes clean. I can't stand that fat SOB anyway, so I'm only doing the show because they're taking our games now, and the management asked me to do it. Did you know, here's what we want to know Wednesday. It's We Want a Sandwich Wednesday. We want a sandwich. We want a sandwich. It's Witch today, and go to any Witch location in the area and tell them, hey, just walk in the door and scream at the top of your lungs, ESPN Radio! And they'll give you a large Witch for just... $6.80, and trust me, it is a filling little sandwich. You will enjoy it. So thanks to the gang for bringing up Witch today for all of us here at the studio on We Want to Know Wednesday, and We Want a Sandwich Wednesday. So that's very cool.
Has anyone done that yet? They haven't walked into the establishment, shouted, although...
They probably will get mad. I shouldn't do that because they'll probably pull their sponsorship and say, we've got all these people coming and screaming, disrupting all our other customers.
Everyone thinks we're getting robbed. We're not. People are just trying to use a great deal for lunch. Pisses everyone off. Typically, I like to have my turkey club with avocado. And please, please hold the disdain. Squirrel. This guy said that he's getting lunch with a mutual friend, Kenny Albert, tonight.
Oh, we love Kenny. You know Kenny. It's Marv's son. He's been on the show. He's the guy that called two of my games when I was at St. Mary's College in Maryland. And
I don't think I'm... Yeah, no.
Kenny's great.
I don't think I'm betraying any trust here, the fact that we're in the DMs, but appreciate the follow.
The irony, as I said on my morning show, was my father turned 79 today, and he's a Louisville native.
Oh, they were telling everybody that the games were
being
aired
in Louisville?
Lots of
fond memories there growing up. Yeah, I don't think he works for the radio station that carries the games. But
he doesn't even work in radio. He's a mail carrier.
No, but he works in Baltimore. He covers Baltimore
great.
Sports.
We got a guy in Baltimore. We got a guy joining us from the Piggly Wiggly in Baltimore. Hey, sorry, I was slicing some ham. What a deal we got today. Just $1.59 a pound.
Said
there's
he,
no way it's $1.59 a pound.
He said he used to be a regular on your show.
Oh, for the network. Yeah, with the network, we would have correspondents join us from the NFL cities.
I've been a long time with Bob.
Yes, he used to come on the net when I was doing the show at the network. Yes.
Ah, so now you remember.
I do, well, because in my own defense, it's a common name. It's not like, you know, Adrian Wojciechowski or
something. Done a lot of drugs, and it's messed with
and
your brain.
And I've had a lot of people from a lot of different cities.
And drugs.
How are they playing tennis? Wasn't it raining in New York? They have a roof closed? Are they playing in the closed?
Can't you do that in the – I thought that the big Arthur Ashe.
Yeah, but
that
are they, is this on the Arthur Ashe Stadium? Maybe it is. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
They're playing. When are we doing Eric Crawford?
1:14. I'm going to mark that for mixtape. No, I'll call him right now, right after you do a read.
Well, I wasn't sure. I thought it was at 1 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. I said about 1. Eric knows us by now.
If I were to do a
read. He's an exceptionally patient friend of the show.
Not really in real life. He's wild. Wildly.
That's where you get, your drugs
I've
from.
I've seen him in Bozich behind... We'll do it live. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. That's where that's Eric Crawford flinging old typewriters in the day back when they used typewriters.
Now he buys them on eBay just so he can throw them.
Everybody duck. Eric's on the raw path again. Do you know if you buy a diamond at Genesis Diamonds today or even tomorrow and then you want to trade it up for a bigger one in a year or two, they'll give you 100% of what you paid for the first diamond plus an extra 10% toward the new diamond? So you're getting 110% of your original purchase price to go towards the larger diamond. Example, you buy a $5,000 diamond now, bring it back in a few years, you find a $7,000 diamond you'd like to get. Genesis will give you $5,500 for your original diamond, that's what you paid, plus 10%. So you only pay the difference in cash for the new one. In this example, you'd pay only $1,500 more, and you'd end up with a much bigger diamond. This is an amazing policy and really shows how Genesis stands behind what they sell. They don't inflate their prices like other stores do. They don't play retail pricing games of any kind. Their sales staff is non-commissioned diamond experts, so they're not going to try and get you to buy something you can't really afford or even don't really want just so they make a bigger commission. They simply have the best selection, the best prices, the best warranties. If you're getting engaged or celebrating a big anniversary or any occasion, go see my friends at Genesis and let them hook you up. Genesis Diamonds is the official jeweler of both the Louisville Cardinals and the Kentucky Wildcats. They are at Shelbyville Road Plaza next to Trader Joe's. All right. Eric Crawford going to join us, and you can find him on Twitter, at Eric Crawford. How did you get that? Eric Crawford is such a common name, I would think. How did you get the at Eric Crawford without all sorts of like underscores and everything? You must have been one of the pioneers of Twitter.
I got on in 2007, I think.
Wow.
6 or 7.
So
I was doing a story about this new thing called Twitter, and some athlete was on it, and I can't even remember who the athlete was, but I'm like, look what a crazy person this is. And I got on it to see his stuff, and here we go. So I was on it very early. I wasn't using it very early.
Yeah, I when it first came out, to be honest with you, I remember reading it about it, and I was struck with the same. I was like, what are you supposed to do with this? I don't understand what this is, that you just say things to the world. It's like going on your rooftop and just yelling, and everybody can hear you, but you have to yell really quickly because you only have 140 characters. But little did I know it would emerge as a major negative force in our lives.
Well, it is. It's a force in sports, and there are various areas where it's a force. I will say that in terms of driving any like web traffic to your website or anything, Facebook remains king. And by a long, long margin. In fact, Twitter has declined, even though we all feel like we're in sports and everybody's on Twitter and everything is about Twitter. Twitter and the bigger, if you step back and look at the numbers, Twitter is pretty small in comparison to some of these others.
Here's an interesting, I'm eating my Witch sandwich, by the way, so the fans will like
that's
that.
That's all right, I'm out walking. I didn't know we were going to do this at once, so but
that's fine.
Peaceful,
you're doing something healthy.
Neighborhood.
You're walking, and I'm having a sandwich. But did you know? Here's what we want to know Wednesday. Did you know that in 8 years in office, President Obama sent 362 tweets. So far, not even through his first term, President Trump has tweeted over 46,000 times. That's what we want to know Wednesday.
I'd like to know how much you and I have tweeted during his first term.
That's a good question. Well, I can tell you.
Not nearly that many.
You have, it tells you if you go to the website, right? Doesn't it tell you, like, well, how many tweets you've sent?
How many times you've tweeted, total.
I have sent, let's see, what's yours?
I can't look at mine right at the moment, so I can't pull it up.
Oh, there it is. What? It just says tweets, but it doesn't tell you how many. Where do you see how many? Where is it? Isn't it on the thing there? By the way, I have a gripe. I have a bone to pick with Twitter. I've been stuck at 17,400 followers, and I know, because I keep track of this being the, it's not even vanity. There was a time we were really pressured to get followers when I was at full time at ESPN, so I paid attention to it. I know I've had at least 100 more people start following me in the last month, and that number hasn't changed. Now, I know I haven't pissed off enough people to completely offset that, so I want to know who I talked to about that, Eric.
Well, they purge. You know, a lot of times they purge inactive accounts, robot accounts, you know, spam accounts, whatever. And I have found that at every plateau you hit, 10, 20, 30, whatever, you get exponentially more of those fake followers. And they come and go in a very short period of time. And even on a couple times over the last 10 years, they've done big Twitter purges, and people have lost thousands of followers.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I lost 700 or 800 once at one time.
Wow!
But if they weren't people, real people to begin with, I wasn't worried. And I apologize for lawnmowers firing up as I walk.
No, that's fine. That's nice.
I walk faster to get away from them.
No, I like that.
But
I like
at least the grass has grown to a point at which it needs to be cut out, because that didn't happen for 2 months.
Yeah, it's working. It's like it brings an element of real reality to the whole thing. We like that. It's the real everyman touch.
That sound, yes,
very nice.
That sound. It's like NPR.
Very nice. All right. Eric Crawford from WDRB is with us here. You have not been with us since the Andrew Luck announcement. I can't imagine you're going to have a whole lot more to say other than what most rational people are saying, which is it's his life. He's tired of being beat up, and he's got enough money to live for 10 lifetimes now. Why does he stick around? But if you have another take, you're welcome to share that. What was your reaction?
I was just surprised that he whatever you want to call it, pulled the trigger or whatever else you want to say so quickly. That seems to be like a kind of thing where you say, I'm going to go in into reserve and I'm going to take, you know, a couple months and see how I feel. I don't guess from what we know now, this is a situation where he just woke up one morning and said, I don't want to do this anymore. But it sure seemed like it based on all the information we'd been given up to then. So, you know, he'll be fine. He's got enough money. He comes from a family with money, which I think is a key thing in this, is that, you know, he doesn't view it as his only shot to have an income or have a great quality life or anything like that. But I still think, you know, it just seems weird to me for a guy that young to make that big a decision in such a stunning way. It seems like the kind of thing you would want to take some time over, but I guess he did.
Think he'll play again?
I don't know. I don't think it's necessary for him to play again to kind of feel happy. Just to me, it's going to depend on what it gets into. But we see it all the time. I mean, we see, you know, we saw Gruden. I mean, why would you quit the Monday Night Football job that he had to go back into coaching? Why would you, if you get a good media job, you know, that pays as well as some of those do, stop and get back in? It's that competition. And so we'll see how much he needs the competition. And he may not. He seems to be kind of a different guy. He's well-educated. He's got other things he can do. He's got plenty of money to do it with. So I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk that he plays again.
You know, the speculation was that this was contrived. The team made him wait so they could sell season tickets. I tend to be cynical about things, but I'm not quite that cynical. I think he just came to camp and said, I'm going to go through this again. I've been in this movie for 4 years. I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I'd be that would be a really, that'd be pretty low. To have him know he was going to make the decision and talk him into delaying it, I hate to think that would be the case. I can't, I, like you, we've seen some weird stuff. So, you know, you can't ever rule anything out. It's 2019, but I don't think that was the case. I think the club was taken by surprise, kind of like most everybody else.
I thought it was like an Onion story.
Yeah.
I mean, I was waiting for the you know, when's the punchline?
Yeah, everybody gets the same thing. You get text alerts, and I probably shouldn't say this because I work for a company that does text alerts. We all work for companies that do text alerts. Most of them should be nowhere near a text alert. It just doesn't matter. I don't need to know this immediately on my phone, interrupting whatever I'm doing to ping in, you know, tell me whatever this thing is telling me. This thing pinged in, and I looked at it, and I'm like, huh, Andrew Luck's retiring, and I put it back down. And then I'm like, it's like your brain takes that second to absorb, and I'm like, what? Andrew Luck is retired?
Yeah, right, right.
So then it was either that or my brain doesn't work as fast as it should. But that text alert I was good with.
It's Eric Crawford from WDRB. You wrote about this or responded at least on Twitter to it a couple of times. I think it's interesting because I don't think, respectfully, even very knowledgeable sports fans, I don't think they appreciate what a coach means when he says this. You wrote about the subject of effort, and even our good friend and colleague here, Ethan Moore, said, I really hope this is just coach speak. There's no excuse for maximum effort every snap. Another person tweeted at you, how hard is it to just try your best? But when we recruited, we used to say our staff, we had five things we looked for in every player. I won't get into what the other four were, but one of the things we talked about was, does he know how to play hard? I don't think every player just intuitively knows how to play hard. It's not something that is just, I'll just go out and try hard. You got to understand what it means to play hard, and I don't think everybody comes to that naturally.
Yeah, and we all think that we work hard or whatever, but I had some long discussions with Pitino about this, and we did the book because this was something that he explored in the book. And he's like, you get guys on Twitter. He said, if you pay attention to Twitter, some guy's tweeting about some college kid, 9 a.m. in the morning, and he's tweeting this out. He's like, what's that guy doing? He's probably at work. He's tweeting while he's at work. They'd go nuts if some ball player were tweeting during a game. He's working, and he's calling talk radio, or he's working, and he's tweeting. People don't apply to themselves. We ask for a much higher standard from athletes than we do from ourselves in a lot of cases. And that's all these players, I think the one thing Satterfield said, he said, look, the first stringers on our team play hard all the time. And they value, like on defense, everybody being on the screen when the tackle is made. Everybody's job is to sprint to the ball, no matter what. No matter what your position is, no matter where you are, once your responsibility is done, you sprint to the ball. And their starters pretty much do that. He said, you put the second team in, and he no longer sees that, at least not consistently. And that's what they are working toward. They're working toward that mentality where every guy on that team, special teams, whatever, is sprinting all the time during the plays, and they're not there yet. So, that you know, I take him at his word. I don't think he's trying to send messages. I think he's just kind of being honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think so as well. Look, this was a texter sent this in a different way, but I'll simplify it. What should Louisville fans expect? What do you expect to see in the Notre Dame game?
I'd like to see them keep Notre Dame under 50. I think, and that's a pretty low bar, but I think that Notre Dame is a lot more talented. I think Louisville's depth on defense is going to be a problem. Notre Dame has a couple of their top wide receivers out, so that might help. But for me, I guess the big things, I haven't put together a list of 1, 2, 3. These are the keys. But I think the number one thing I want to see from Louisville is, can it maintain offensive possessions? Can it generate first downs? Can it eat up some possession? Because I think that's going to be a big part of this season. Can it run the ball? You know, can they find is the running back offensive line combination good enough to be able to run the ball? I think the problem is that Notre Dame knows that Louisville has some questions in passing accuracy, and so they're going to stack it against the run, and Louisville's going to have to either win in the air and do things in the air or have a lot of three and outs. So we'll see what happens. But to me, number one thing is, can they run the ball? Because if they can run the ball and maintain possession, they can keep games close, and they can help their defense a little bit, keep them off the field a little bit more. And I think it all starts with that.
I'm going to be more intrigued to see. Their defense was almost unbelievably bad last year. Yeah. And has been for a couple of years. And I'm of the belief to some degree, maybe football coaches will differ, but I know in basketball you can that's the one area where effort and focus can make a bigger difference. In offense, if you can't shoot, you can't shoot, or you can't screen. But if you put effort out and you're focused defensively, you can defend a little bit, at least adequately. I'm going to be curious to see if their defensive effort is better. What you were talking about, 11 guys to the ball, just make it difficult for Notre Dame rather than just roll over, as it seemed like, unfortunately, they did in games last year.
Yeah, can they tackle? That's true. That's 85% of defense, especially in college football, is do they tackle? Because you see a lot of times, and we saw it at Louisville, guys may be in position to make a play, but they don't tackle. And they really haven't tackled with any great degree of efficiency since Charlie Strong. And I think that's the great thing that Strong's defenses did. They were able to tackle. And it's like in some ways a lost art in college football because they don't have as much contact in practice, and there's just a lot of reasons. But tackling will be another thing to watch. Do they have good fundamentals? Do they make plays when they get a chance to make them? And if you can do that on defense, you can be all right.
Yeah, Eric Crawford is with us from WDRB here on the V Show, ESPN 680, 105.7, coming from the Papa John's studios. What about Kentucky? A good Toledo team, but they are a MAC team, and they're double-digit favorites. What different storyline there, because they're coming off one of their best seasons ever, and the coaching staff still fully expects them to be a successful team. But, you know, how successful and what defines success, and what about a game where you open at home against the MAC team? What should we look for? What are you looking for?
Well, we're always going to be looking at that secondary because they're so inexperienced, and how do they handle themselves. Toledo has experience back, and so that's a dangerous team to play with a very young secondary because you've got a quarterback who ought to be able to really recognize mismatches, recognize breakdowns in coverage and take advantage of them. So that makes the game a little more iffy. But Kentucky finished last season. They finished the Citrus Bowl with as much momentum as any Kentucky program has had at the end of a season, I think, probably since I've been covering college football. I can't remember another year where they finished on such an upbeat with so much momentum. Now, you lose Benny Snell, you lose all those guys on defense, and you're not really sure about the next season. But I think it's very important for Kentucky not just to win this game, but to look good in the opener and to look sharp and to do what they're supposed to do and win this game by double digits. They don't always perform that well consistently in season openers, but I think it's important to do it in this one to say, look, yeah, we lost some people, but we're only building on what we did last season. We're not rolling the clock back.
So you are of the belief that if they like win this game by 4 or 5 or something, that's really cause for alarm?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think there might be. Because, look, I mean, it's not cause for alarm in terms of are they then going to turn around and lose the next game? No. But this team, if you look at it, and if they were to be up on a plane where they could be, I mean, this team could be 6-0 when they play Georgia. Florida is coming here, and they're not great. They weren't great in that season opening game.
Right.
And, you know, South Carolina, Mississippi State, those are tough games on the road. But, you know, Mississippi State, Kentucky's in the ballgame with those teams. They've beaten South Carolina in recent years. So they probably should win that game again. I don't care what the preseason hype is. So they got a chance to, if you can be 6-0, 5-1 going into Georgia, you got a chance for another special season. And I think it's right there for them. But I do think, for them to be sharp in the opener will have shown us that they had a good offseason, they took the season seriously, and they're ready to come out and make another statement.
Do you expect that?
I don't. But again, here's the problem. They're Kentucky until they're not.
Mm.
And so, they proved something to me in the bowl game last year, but you did it with one of the best defensive, maybe the best defensive player in the country, and a great running back. And you lost both of those guys coming into this season. What we need to see is kind of the kind of mental focus we need that you want. We need execution, and we need all that. And they've only had, I know Toledo, you know, they're picked to win the MAC division and all that stuff, but this is not a Kentucky team that historically has played its best game in season openers. You know, and that's just how it is. So you'd like to see them come out and do that for a change, but until they do it, it's hard to kind of say you're confident that they will.
All right. As always, my friend, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for working us into your walk, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
Tried to stay away from the lawnmowers. Thanks a lot.
It was very impressive work out of Eric Crawford from WDRB with us here on The V-Show. We'll take a short break. We got a lot more to come a little bit later on in the program. Jerry Coleman is going to join us. He's not going to join us. You said he was going to join us.
You don't listen to me. I said I was trying to get him. No, Chris Redmond will join the program.
Oh, yeah, they're almost 2 o'clock. The same guy. Except one played for the Ravens and one talks about the Ravens. Yeah.
I don't think Redmond ever played for the Ravens.
Oh, my God. You don't know that he was with the Ravens? He's their starting quarterback, for God's sake.
Wow. Redmond was? Really?
Yeah. He's the guy lined up behind center, and they threw him the ball, and then he tried to throw it, and then sometimes they tackled him.
I always just think of him with the Falcons.
No.
Completely forgot about that.
All right. Well, there's a lot more to come. Stay with us.
Listening to The V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
It was the number one song.
What? Why is there chess?
Chess was the name of the show. The premise of it was two chess masters who, this is, you got to remember, in the 80s, right in the midst of the Cold War, the U.S. was playing Russia in chess. Boris Spassky, Bobby Fischer took on added significance besides just chess. So this was a thriller wrapped around that. There was these two, the manager of one of the players has a love affair with the other player. That's what it comes down to. And so it's the love triangle, such as it were.
Just had a cool camera shot of him, but the camera's looking up through a chessboard at him.
Yep.
Like as if he's like on a table or like under the table. So there's like your cat like looking up at you while you were playing. Yeah. Like,
it got very great reviews in Europe where it ran for a long time. But then when it came to Broadway and it flopped, I never saw it, but I know this song was a big deal.
And now there's two guys kickboxing. This is a hell of a music video.
It's a hell of an odd play.
What is going on? Look up, I mean, it's an audio medium, so everyone look up this music video. Murray Head, One Night in Bangkok, from Chess, official video. It's exciting.
I'm glad you're entertained by it.
No, something I've never beaten Jamie in. That's a cool chess board, by the way.
Thank you.
It's like lit up. It's like neon underneath. The pieces are really big.
Yep.
And plastic, so when you throw them against the wall in anguish, when Jamie takes your queen with a rook, like typically happens with me, it won't make a hole in the wall.
It's a bit of a shame. What are we doing here? Here we go.
Oh, there's a soundbite I wanted to get.
Well, we got some. We got want to get some. We want to know Wednesdays, and we want to know Wednesday. This one says, "Did you know that the city of Cleveland and former season ticket holders sued the NFL to keep the Browns' name, history, and intellectual property?" So there you go. So that answers our question. Okay. So I guess the Browns kept all their stuff, even though the actual franchise, such as it were, went to Baltimore. Art Modell took the franchise there, but the Cleveland people sued to keep their information. It makes for an awkward situation because, like, the people in Baltimore loved the Colts. They were absolutely crushed when they lost the Colts.
I saw that special where they just packed up in the middle of the night.
And so, you know, they
the
still
Colts
take
kind of heels in that. Kind of crappy.
Ursay, the old man was definitely a heel. No question.
That was not cool. It was hard watching that because we lived in Indiana at the time. I was a diehard Colts fan.
It was, but I mean, so, you know, the Colts fans, they still want ownership of Johnny Unitas and Ray Perkins and Lenny Moore and all those guys. So I don't know what the Ravens do. That's a good question, what they do there. I think if you go to the offices in Indianapolis, they pay homage to the great players that were in Baltimore. But I don't know if those players, you know, I never know how the players react. That's the thing, because some people just honor the franchise. Like, I'll ask you, Al will give you the name of the team, and you tell me where they started. You won't know these guys. No, Kings. Where did they start?
Pittsburgh.
Rochester. They were the Rochester Royals. They moved to Cincinnati, became the Cincinnati Royals. They moved to Kansas City, became the Kansas City Omaha Kings, and they moved from there to Sacramento, became the Sacramento Kings.
Hmm. That was some point.
The L.A. Clippers.
They were on the East Coast, too. Because a Clipper's a boat. Is it Carolina?
No.
Damn.
I think I got this right. I might be misspeaking. I believe they were the Buffalo Braves.
Oh.
And they moved to San Diego and became the San Diego Clippers, and then they moved to Los Angeles in 1984. Yes, I don't know how I knew that, but I did. And there's a tie-in here because the owner of the Buffalo Braves was John Y. Brown. He swapped franchises with then Boston Celtics owner Irv Levin. So that's how he wound up taking the Celtics. And then Irv Levin said, I'm out of here. I'm going to California. I'm going to San Diego. Forward my mail.
California. Here I come.
So there they go. How about the...
Wait, that so the owners basically just traded teams?
Yeah. Traded teams.
Okay.
How about the... Let's see if you know this one. The Atlanta Braves. Where did they start?
Oh... Were they Washington?
No.
Damn.
You're just pulling cities out of your ass, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's the Atlanta Braves came most directly from Milwaukee, but started...
Oh, that's right.
But started
I knew that.
In Boston.
I knew that.
They were the Boston
Braves. I knew
all
that.
The Boston Braves became the Milwaukee Braves.
Where did the
Braves.
Washington Senators come from?
The Washington Senators are a great question, and I'm not 100% sure I know the answer to that because I never know what order they were. The Senators... were tied in with the Minnesota Twins. And I believe the Washington Senators started in the Minnesota Twins started in Washington. Exactly, that's I do have that right. God, I wasn't sure about that one. The Washington Senators played from 1901 to 1960, moved to Minnesota, and played in 1961. Did you ever listen, by the way, you know, I think I told you this. If ever you get a chance, it's on the internet. It is on YouTube. It's the last game in the Washington Senators' history. And didn't we play this? I think we played this on the air a few weeks ago. The Senators are playing the Yankees, and they're beating them, which was saying something because the Senators were pretty bad. It was in 19—that's right. There was a second go-round of the Senators. I forgot about that. The Senators became the Minnesota Twins in 1961. There was no baseball in the nation's capital for a while. They started another franchise, and that one left also and became the Texas Rangers.
Oh,
so the people in Washington got screwed twice.
And then they finally were like, hey, let's not name them the Senators. Let's name them the Nationals.
Nationals. And move from where they start. You should know that.
Were the Nationals?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they started. They're the Expos.
Attaboy. Yeah. The Senators' last game in the last inning, it's on YouTube right here. They were playing the Yankees, and as I said, they were winning. And with two outs in the last inning, the fans just basically decided they were going to take everything that wasn't nailed down. The game is going on. It's not over. And they run out, and they start taking the bases. They started pulling things out of the stands. And the poor play-by-play announcer on the radio. We should actually play it. It's kind of funny. Maybe we should play it. Because the play-by-play announcer, he's so desperate to have them win their last game. It's almost romantic. And so he's like, we're going to have to get these people off the field. And his analyst is saying, this game's over. There's no way they're getting these people off the field. He said, well, they're not going to be able to play this last out unless they can get everybody off the field. They're not getting everybody off the field. The Senators are going to have to forfeit this game. The PA announcer needs to say, everyone get off the field because they got to get this last out. They're not getting this game. It's just hilarious that the guy just is clinging to the possibility of winning. And it's just... you don't see it coming. It's not like you hear him saying, boy, the crowd's getting unruly. They're just playing, and then there's two outs in the last inning, and then they just go flying out on the field. Let me see if this is it. Last inning.
Down.
Come on, say something.
A pinch hitter for the Yankees for Jack Aker, Philippe Ballou.
We don't want this part. Let me see if I can get it to where there's two outs. Well, I'm trying to see whether it's... Let me see. Here we go. Here it comes.
Oh, there we go. Many souvenir hunters.
460 showed up tonight. The one strike pitch is outside, 1-1.
It's coming here. We're right near it.
Mercer has flied to center. Hit a two-run homer, his 25th of the year. Then he grounded out first for the pitcher covering.
Here we go.
He swings and misses strike two.
You'll start hearing firecrackers going off.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He'll be the second leading batter in the American League, trailing only the batting champ, Tony Oliva, of the Minnesota Twins.
Come on, start storming the castle.
The 1-2 coming is outside. It's 2-2.
I think he makes the second out, and then all hell breaks loose.
Batting for the New York Yankees.
I never heard this. The game becomes a forfeit.
Really? How many of those in history have there been?
Two out. One out away from winning their last game. One out away from winning their last game. And they have to forfeit. I thought, there's no such thing.
Who's the play-by-play guy?
I don't know who this guy is. Here we go.
This will not be a complete game unless they get back.
See?
So if there's booze, what is going on?
As pandemonium has broken loose, and the field is filled with many souvenir hunters. The Senators lead 7-5 with two outs. Police are trying to restore order, but the crowd continues to mill all around the field.
We need the analyst to come in here and tell him, pretty much, talk him off the ledge in a minute.
Some fans are scooping up dirt. More and more now are converging on the field. The Senators are one out away from victory.
The announcer can hear, they're one out away! Everyone go back to your seats!
Have two outs in the top of the ninth inning. Realistically, they're a lot closer to defeat because they'll never get this ball game.
Here he goes. Here's the voice of reason, the analyst.
There's a patrolman standing on home plate, another one on the mound, and they're very rapidly becoming outnumbered.
It's escalating so fast.
The analyst is the voice of reason here. You'll hear the play-by-play guy still not going to give up hope in a minute. He's still like, well, they got to just get everyone off the field.
A mass of bodies on the field. Most of them just standing there,
glimpse of RFK Stadium, the site of Major League Baseball, perhaps for the last time. It may well be that the Senators will be denied their final victory.
And they were. So that went on for another 10 minutes before the PA guy came on and said,
we this ain't happening.
And that was not the last time I saw Major League Baseball, though, because when the Nationals came into existence, they played there while they were waiting for Nationals Park to be built.
How many forfeits, though, have there been?
That's a good question.
That needs to be
That's the last forfeit, I believe, in Major League Baseball history. I don't believe there have been any since, but I'll look.
This one coming down, UPS Jobs text line 437-9680, we want to know Wednesday. Caitlin/Bruce Jenner was drafted by the Kansas City Kings in the 1977 NBA draft, but never played. I didn't know that.
Well, he wasn't even a basketball player. It was a publicity stunt.
It was like when Manute Bol played minor league hockey.
The woman who married Don Drysdale. No, it wasn't Dan Drysdale. Another woman. Ann Meyer got drafted. Nancy Lieberman, I think, got drafted. Let's see. Here we go. 1970, that was the last forfeit. And the score in Major League Baseball, if it's forfeited, is recorded as 9-0. Okay, that's how that works. Although not uncommon in baseball's early days, they are now. There have been five. That would have been a great question. Did you know there have been five forfeits in Major League Baseball since 1954? The last was in 95. So there were two since that game that we just heard.
Wow.
There was one in 1979. Since 1914, there's only been one incident where a team deliberately made a decision to forfeit a game, and that was the 1977 Baltimore Orioles. So there's actually been three forfeits since that game we just listened to. I did not know that. Let's see.
I bet you one happens sometime this season or next season.
Why?
I just because of, like, I don't, it's not Mandela effect, but I just, like, recency thing. I bet it happens.
The cappuccino effect. What about a magician? Is the Carbonaro effect.
Carbonaro effect? Yeah.
Washington Senators game. I just told you that. The home team led 7-5. You just heard that. They stormed the field. Oh, I should have known this one. I forgot. The next one is when Bill Veeck came up with 10-cent beer night.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and the crowd lost their minds. No, it wasn't Bill Veeck. It was another, because he wasn't the GM then. This was Cleveland. This wasn't in Chicago. Intoxicated fans ran on the field, attacked Jeff Burrows with the score tied 5-5 in the ninth inning. This led to a riot in which drunken and rowdy fans, armed with an array of debris, including chunks of the stadium seating. I shouldn't laugh at that, because players could have been in deep trouble. Brawled with players as well as the umpires. The umpires sprinted off the field and gave the game to Texas. During the Baltimore Orioles, a game between the Orioles and Toronto at Exhibition Stadium, the grounds crew placed a tarp over the two mounds in the Blue Jays bullpen, which was in foul territory outside the left field foul line after light rain. Before the start of the bottom of the fifth inning, with the Blue Jays leading 4-0, volatile Orioles manager Earl Weaver came out of the dugout and claimed to umpire Marty Springstead that the tarp engendered his players by exposing them to the risk they could slip or trip on it when entering the bullpen to catch a foul ball. Weaver ordered his team from the field, said they would not return until the tarp was removed. Springstead ordered the tarp removed from the round that was closest to the fair territory, but not the tarp from the other mound. These two stubborn guys. Like, I'm not going to take both tarps off. I'll just take one off. So Weaver said, I'm not going to play. Springstead said, I'm not going to take the other one off. They argued for 20 minutes before Weaver returned to the dugout. Springstead then waited 5 minutes, the period of time specified by the rule book, for the Orioles to take the field. Weaver said they would not do so. Springstead said, game Blue Jays. I forgot this one. This was the Bill Veeck one I was thinking of. 1979 Disco Demolition Night.
Oh, I remember. Yeah,
this
I've
was
heard
when they
this.
All turned on disco. The Chicago White Sox held a game in which Chicago radio personality Steve Dahl came on to the field to blow up a box full of disco records between games of a doubleheader with the Tigers. After the box was blown up, rowdy and drunk fans who had packed Comiskey Park beyond capacity, that's the hatred they had for disco, these people, stormed the field, engaged in various acts of vandalism, and did not leave until the Chicago riot police came in full gear. The field was so badly damaged, the umpires said the second game couldn't be played, and so it was forfeited to Detroit. And then the last forfeit in Major League history.
This has been a riot over 10-cent beer.
And
this has been a riot over both these happened in the 70s?
Those were in the 70s. The last forfeit in Major League Baseball, though,
70s were crazy,
is 24 man. Years ago. We just passed the anniversary. August 10th, 1995. The Dodgers. Oh, I forgot about this one. Oh, God. And now I remember all these. Didn't you see the video of this? The Dodgers gave out baseballs. Mm-hmm. To paying customers, oh, as God, they entered the stadium. Well. Fans interrupted the game in the seventh inning when they just en masse threw all the baseballs onto the field. And in the bottom of the ninth, with the Cardinals leading 2-1, the first Dodger batter, Raul Mondesi, was called out on strikes, was ejected by home plate umpire Jim Quick for arguing, followed by Dodger manager Tommy Lasorda moments later for arguing and abusing umpire Quick. Dodger fans, fueled by a series of close calls, again threw their souvenir baseballs out of the field. The Cardinals left the field due to safety concerns. When the Cardinals returned to the field, Dodger fans didn't picked up right where they left off. They threw more balls out of the center field bleachers.
It was like a chuck-a-puck night.
It was. And the umpire said, "Nah, I've had enough of this." As a result of that, Major League Baseball ruled that any future promotional giveaways of baseballs, the items will be given as the fans exit
Smart.
The stadium. Yes. So forfeits in Major League Baseball. Disco Demolition Night was forfeit. Second game of doubleheader. Yes, we just read that. You are correct. Let's see what this one was.
Chris Redmond on the other side of this break, by the way. We're up at the top of the hour. We don't have to take it right away. But I'm just saying we're.
Let's see what else.
We're getting close. 437-968 UPS Jobs text line. You want to text in your We Want to Know
Wednesdays. We haven't gotten many good ones yet today. This is wide open still. This is a wide open, and there's some nice prizes. Some very nice prizes.
Birdhead Ryan had a solid one. I mean, nothing's going to top last week's, but he had a solid one. The GM of the Mets is
son-in-law of
Neil Armstrong.
That all right, so it's still open, though. I think it's still anybody's competition, so send us some good ones. We need some good. I brought the Stratomatic one is the best one right now. The board game record by Guinness for sitting down and playing one continuous board game by the same people. You can't leave. I thought you could leave. No. Is 61 hours and a couple of minutes. They played for two entire days and then 13 more hours. Oh, what'd you do? Did you give yourself a shock? Why'd you jump?
No, my phone. I've got like a little setup over here, with my iPad, Rosie. It doesn't have a case yet, so I'm still using the box as sort of a case. But it makes like a nice little platform thing to type on. And then I also have my cell phone, which is charging, wedged here between the transmitter and the board, because that's where the cord can reach. And then if I bump it, it sometimes falls. So it was falling.
Oh, and you saw
it. And I made a rather athletic catch.
Very nice. Almost a perfect day. Great weather. Playing golf. Listening to your show on my phone. Then I get the low battery message. Damn. Have a good show. You're on your own.
How many times have you and I both said that to each other?
That we have a good show? I said it to you. No,
have a good show. You're on your own.
Yeah, that usually will get a rise out of Nicholas Michael. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Another hour to go. Chris Redmond straight ahead. Talk a little quarterbacking. Andrew Luck, Lamar with the Ravens, his former team.
Chip Kelly had some high praise for U of L's offense. Dwayne Ledford.
Chip Kelly.
I typed that.
Why would Chip Kelly say
Brian
anything
about Kelly?
Louisville?
I'm sorry.
I just want to keep on this. I just want to beat it to death.
No, it was
Chip Kelly. No. Why does he care at all about Louisville's offense?
You need to do that because I've been doing that all day. Maybe. When I'll like be listening to you,
Chip
smiling
Beck,
and nodding,
maybe.
And I'm trying to find the soundbite, and I type in Chip Kelly, and then I spend 2 minutes like, why the hell is Chip Kelly showing up and not, oh, I typed it in, Chip Kelly.
Yeah, no.
Not Brian Kelly. So, yeah, I need to get Chip Kelly. It's like us having a song stuck in your head.
Top
I keep
five
saying
chips
Chip
of
Kelly.
All time.
Yeah, that might do it.
Top five chips of all time.
Cheetos?
No. I mean like name chip, like Chip. Chip.
Chips Ahoy.
Chip. No. Like Chip Beck, the golfer.
Chip Patterson.
And then Chip Kelly.
I like Chip Patterson.
Who's Chip
CBS,
Patterson?
From CBS. Do you remember any of your guests?
Yeah. If you type in top five chips of all time, they list the food chips.
Oh.
So I don't want that. Top five people name Chip.
Chip Skylark. Quality musician.
Who is that? Is that a real person?
No, it's a fictional character. I think voiced by either Joey Fatone or Lance Bass. I think it was Joey Fatone. No, it was Chris What's-His-Face from NSYNC. And he was on Fairly Odd Parents.
You cannot look that up. It will not let you get away from...
Potato chips?
Yeah. Oh, how about Chip Gaines? He's the one married to Joanna, the fixer-upper guy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So he's a good, healthy
that's
one.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a solid one.
Chip Beck, the golfer, was very good for a long time before his career went south.
These have to be famous chips, right? It can't be like a...
Chipper Jones. Does that count? Chipper, I guess.
Yeah, Chipper. Yeah, Chipper
Judges,
Jones.
Ding. Okay. Ding. All right, we'll give you that. Chip... I can't think of any other chips.
Hey, there's definitely some
we're definitely overlooking
athletes.
Some.
Yeah.
I was going to say, athlete named Chip. Who would that come up as?
Chipper,
well, Chip Kelly, Chip. The football guy.
Yeah. Isn't he kind
Here
of
we go. Here's a list, finally. Chip Kelly, Chip Znuff, one of
Chip
the founders.
Chip and Dale?
Chip Arndt, Chip Kidd, Chip Taylor. Chip
Rangers?
Carey, the announcer. I don't know any of these people. I really don't know any of these. There's not as many chips as you would think that people would know. You said
Chip McDaniel,
here,
right?
Ready? Chip Kelly, Chip Eston. Who's he? An American actor and comedian. Chip Znuff, one of the founders of Enough's Enough, an American rock band. Chip Arndt, never heard of him. Chip Kidd, author. Chip Taylor, songwriter. Chip Carey, the broadcaster. I've heard of him. Chip Fields is a woman. Chip Chalmers.
Did you say Chip Banks?
Chip Douglas. Chip Banks is a former professional linebacker. Chip Franklin is a comedian and musician. Chip and Pepper, identical twin business people from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Okay. Chip Fu, just a picture of him. Doesn't say anything about him.
Chip Nicholas.
Chip Hale,
American
third baseman.
He is not. He's a porn star. Right.
Chip Silverman was the author of 5 books and coached the NCAA's only what? Coached the NCAA's only what? Damn it. It shouldn't take this long to open it. The only African-American college lacrosse team.
Huh.
So where did he coach, do you suppose? Where was that? Oh, Morgan State. That's a good point. And I didn't ever, you don't think of lacrosse.
Maybe. This was a...
Even though Jim Brown was a great...
there was an also search for a thing.
Yeah.
And it was Candy Law.
Who's that?
She's...
Are you in a porn well now?
No,
you're in a porn rabbit hole?
No, that's what I thought. But no, it's she's actually a musician from, I think, classical, from Hong Kong. But I wonder who has the more famous group, Candy or Chip? Chips or Candy?
That's a good question. Chip Cox is a Canadian linebacker from my Montreal Alouettes. I actually heard him. Seriously, there's not as many famous chips as you would
think.
People
really aren't usually named Chip, right? Like it's a...
Yeah, but that's a lot on this list, and none of them I've ever heard of. Chip Glass played in the NFL, tight end 6 seasons for Cleveland. Give me one more famous chip here. I need one on this list, which
Chip
goes
Eston.
On and on, that I don't know
Chips
any of these
enough.
People. Chip Beck, I told you. That one I got.
Chip Kidd, Chip Taylor.
Chip Vaughn. A lot of chips in the Canadian Football League. He plays with Saskatchewan.
Chip Carey, Chip Fields. Ooh.
That's unbelievable.
Chip Chalmers.
I expected to just see a whole bunch of names. I'm at the bottom of the list. I heard of me. That list was 100 people long. I've heard of maybe 6.
Chip and Pepper.
Yeah, that's the one I read you before.
Yeah, Chip Hale.
Who's that?
Major League second baseman. Currently with the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's a big one. All right, he made the cut. Chip Hale.
Wow. All right, I just tried to look up people named Candy.
Can make sure you have safe search on.
Calm down.
Chip Foose.
Oh, you're right, though. There are a lot of...
Yep.
Who's Candy Moore?
Oh, my God, we're idiots.
What?
Chip Ganassi.
Oh, yeah. Well, why? How is one of my... I'm reading the list. He's not even on the list.
He's on this one, according to Ranker.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Well, I'm not finding many candies either. You heard of if any of these
Chip
people,
Myers,
if any of these people are porn actors or actresses, then forgive me because I don't know any
this?
Of them. Because you brought it up, and I'm interested by that. Oh, would you know more famous people named Chip or Candy? That's a great question. Candy Aguilar, don't know who that is. Candy Godiva, Candy Clark, Candy Spelling, Candy Dulfer. Oh, Candy Dulfer. You know how I know her? Tony Kornheiser loved Candy Dulfer. She's a musician.
Oh, okay.
Candy Moore, Candy Carson. Oh, here's a guy. Candy Maldonado.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. All right.
That's a good one.
Oh, here we go. Chip England, basketball player.
Yeah.
Currently assistant coach for the Spurs.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh, how about John Candy?
That works. That works.
So, I don't know. That's
Chip Myrtle, linebacker.
No. We're stretching. We're really clutching. If you want your kid to be famous, my advice would be don't name them Candy or Chip. You name them after another food group. Like, what's the – that would be a question. Then we have to let this go.
Like Biscuit.
What's the most –
he's in a ton of Hall of Fames.
What's the most famous
food name
that a person would have that – like Apple – I used to coach a guy named Brian Apple. He wasn't famous, though.
Apple, pizza. No.
Orange.
Orange.
Cherry.
Fruit.
Pear.
It would just be fruit.
I don't – seriously. You better not be named after food.
Onion.
Either.
No.
Daryl Strawberry.
That's a pretty good one.
That would be a good
one. Did you play the name game one time?
Yeah, the name game was you had to have the same name as you know somebody. Like if your name, you called into the show and your name was William, you could pick a William. And then we'd throw it up there to see if it would win in the competition. So you could pick who you wanted. You could take a real legitimate one, William Hurt, the actor or something, or William Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was up to the listeners. They could vote whether they thought it was funny or entertaining or famous or whatever. The idea was to find somebody that was, where people go, oh, yeah, you know, kind of obscure but famous.
Okay, that nice little in between.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the whole key. All right, we're very late. Chris Redman next, ESPN 680 1057.
With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today, delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination online at bluegrasskarting.com.